Welcome to another edition of Minding Your Business with your host, D.B. Hegler. Presented weekly here on WJCU in cooperation with the Shaker Heights Chamber of Commerce.
Welcome back to Minding Your Business. We are so glad you tuned in today. I'm your host, D.B. Hegler. We're going to talk about social influence in the workplace. You'll be fascinated what we were able to learn. There is a line of therapy called dialectic behavioral therapy, or DBT. It's a treatment designed to help people, quote, build a life worth living. It was developed by Dr. Marshall Linehan. Today we have with us, all the way from New York, Dr. Matthew Mandelbaum, PhD, who will tell us how to not only apply this treatment, but how to use it to thrive, how to use it to be more productive, how that social behavior interplays into the workplace and helps you become more productive. Welcome to Minding Your Business, Dr. Mandelbaum.
Thank you. It's really good to be here all the way from New York City.
Did I get that right? The DBT incorporates behavioral therapy and helps teach you problem solving?
Sure. Well, DBT was originally developed by Dr. Marshall Linehan as a way to help people who had borderline personality disorder. And it really is about a way to practice cultivating one's wisdom and one's ability to live mindfully to build what she called a life worth living. And I actually thought that this work could be used on a broader stage to help people build a life of worth that goes across domains of your work and your personal, social, familial aspirations, your hobbies, et cetera, to help you reduce non-effective, non-life-affirming behaviors and help you build a life that, you know, the life that you want, the life that you feel authentic.
So am I understanding that this dialectical behavioral therapy is a treatment that you have learned to apply in a practical way so that it is not only for patients, but for people who just want to live a better life?
Well, I think that, you know, the treatment itself is for becoming more wise and more effective. And you can do that in a couple of ways. First of all, by being more mindful to where you are in the present and seeing the present for what it is, to cultivate your wisdom, to be able to practice distress tolerance so you can handle life stresses, to be able to accept the moment for what it is so you can make change if necessary, and to be able to regulate your emotions so they don't take hold of you, and also to be interpersonally effective and to be able to get what you want, say no to what you don't want, have good relationships, and promote self-respect. So I believe that these are goals that everybody wants in their life, and they actually could use these skills to be able to do that. And I've been able to help people who are university students and might be adults, and also professionals in business, healthcare, the arts, and education, find more power and be more impactful at work, and also then have more time and energy at home to build a complete or healthful life.
How have you been able to apply this towards the training for professionals and executive effectiveness training?
Well, you know, my undergraduate degree is from Penn and it's in economics, and one of the really big features in economics is arbitrage, right? Because arbitrage is my ability to see something that's worth less or more than the other people perceive. And you are only able to see arbitrage if you can see correctly and see mindfully of what's happening in the moment. If you can apply non-judgmental thinking and see things as they are, not as you want them to be, you can be able to have an effective action or an effective behavior that will allow you to either transform, make, or learn something that could help produce dynamic change. I think that's what really we really want to have in a business environment. When this happens and you become overtly emotional, you might not have that clarity. If you become overtly technical, you might miss the intuitiveness that your emotions can give you to see things for what they are. And combining that reasonableness with this emotionalness, you can develop your wisdom. So that has vast, vast applications, you know, in the financial markets, in the artistic environments, educational communities too. My ability to see children for how they are actually performing can allow me to select an array of strategies in order to help them. My ability to see the value of a company and its holistic perspective in a mindful way allows me to know what I want to do with that business environment. And I find that professionals need that ability to be able to do their job well. They also need their ability to handle stress when it's difficult. So, for example, you know, I don't think anybody knows exactly what's going to happen in every moment, every second of their day as they go to work. What do they do when life hands them a curveball? What do they do in these situations? In these situations, you can either try to solve a problem, or you can tolerate stress, you can regulate your emotions, or you can, you know, stay miserable or be miserable. And that's a choice. And if we can put all those four things into a choice set, we'll be able to give people the power to make good choices in the moment. In addition, in the workplace, even though the internet and email communication has sped up the pace of work, there are some times where the best thing to do is just sit and wait. And if you are an active problem solver and you don't have good toleration of stress and you're unable to regulate your emotions, sitting on your hands can get very, very challenging. You might find yourself moving towards a staying miserable piece, which has a legacy effect that hurts a lot of people. In that case, you might want to learn some tolerating distress tolerance skills so you can be prepared, because that will allow you to see when the waiting should be over, because it'll be more mindful to know what to do. You know, people need to learn these skills. They also need to learn how to interact with people to make sure that they get what they want from their work environment, or they can know how to clarify their objectives of getting their goals, their relationships, or their self-respect, and they might need to figure out what they actually want before they go all into saying what they want. And they might need a way to do that.
I want to point out that two of your capacities for DBT treatment are maybe intertwined: the interpersonal effectiveness, which is working with others to get what you want and say no to what you don't, and emotional regulation. Maybe those are extremely compatible, because if you work with others and you influence them and you learn to say no when you really mean no, that can be a component in helping you regulate emotions. Correct?
Of course, definitely. You know, I tell people about that, like, especially the service like texting, right? Or there's whatever immediate communication skill you use. It used to be that if I wanted to talk to you and you're in Ohio now, I'd send you like a telegraph. It'd take me a long time to think about what I want to send you, and it was very expensive. That gave me the price of patience to see what I wanted to say, and then try to be very communicative in an effective way. Now it's all immediate. And sometimes I'll say something because I'm just trying to dive right in under a heat of emotionality where I really want to learn how to stop, pause, think, and then make 1 second before I press send. And I think a lot of times in workplace environments, they press send and then they wish they could do one, press the undo button. So in those situations, clarifying your objectives and thinking, who is this interaction really for, is important, because then if it's only for yourself, is the interaction the best way to get that validation, for example? Or could you wait and withhold that information until you see someone in person? I think that's a really important thing, because we're very interested in just sending things out there. As we now know, there's a big legacy effect of that too. People who need to regulate their emotions need to know helpful ways and safe ways to do that so it doesn't increase interpersonal conflict. And if I tell my boss every time I have a problem that I have a problem, it might be seen as an effect. It might be another way that I can come up with a plan about something. And then my ways of being autonomous, competent, and related, my self-determination, it actually goes up in my eyes and in the eyes of my boss. So I think what the best part about the skill set in the workplace or in a university setting as well is probably increasing the perception of options for how to behave to determine what would be effective.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more.
Welcome back to Minding Your Business. We are talking about social influence in the workplace with Dr. Matthew Mandelbaum. Do we add to this component? We have different audiences that we communicate different things to. So I may say people are speaking on Facebook in one way about certain things. And then when they come into the workplace, they have to regulate those emotions maybe and speak in a different way. And how are we balancing that? Or does DBT help teach us to manage those different parts of our mind so that we aren't saying the wrong thing in the wrong place in the wrong way?
Sure. And I think, like, I think it comes down to what are the functions of the behavior, whatever it is, right? Like, when you see me, you're near Cleveland, right?
We're just outside of Cleveland, University Heights.
So yesterday, the Yankees played the Indians, right?
Yes.
And, I'm from New York City. I bet you can tell who I was rooting for.
Go Tribe, right?
maybe different from yours, right?
Yes.
If we worked in the same environment and I was coming as a thought leader to your community, should I wear a Yankees uniform or Yankees hat that day?
You could. I don't know how you'd get out of here, but you could.
Right. I could, but it sends a message.
Right.
And who's that uniform really for? Is it to bolster my self-respect with my community, or is it to build a relationship with you? Or is it to show that I love baseball? And there's a picture in the New York Times recently of LeBron James, like 3 years ago or something, he wore a Yankee hat, and I think this year he didn't show who he liked, because he had that same problem about loyalty in terms of what you're wearing or what you're saying or something like that. And I think he was mindful in this way of not wearing a hat, for example. That's what I think the story was. I'd be mindful about how I dress when I come to see you, because I know that people perceive things based on dress. And then I use that as a tool to get what I want. Then I'm being more effective because I'm feeling like it's important. I think that use of life speech as an effective tool makes it important for getting your goals and for also, being curious about what could happen.
What's the difference between dialectical behavioral therapy and emotional intelligence?
So dialectical behavioral therapy is a process through which one thinks about dealing with discovery, development, dynamics, and growth with ambiguity and ambivalence, where you're trying to take your values and change that to goals, strategies, and tactics in a transactional analysis that gets you to a better position. And I think emotional intelligence, I understand it, is your ability to use your emotions to get things. But this is more of an idea that...
The emotional intelligence is more of a platform where you understand and you're communicating. You're reading other people's emotions, maybe regulating your own emotions, and you're communicating in an exchange. Maybe the dialectical behavioral therapy is more of a treatment to help you blend your life to be more productive.
I think that your reasonable side and your emotional side is going together to promote your wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the emotional intelligence, I understand it, but I'm not an expert, would be about ways of understanding the emotional factors in the decision processes. But here we are really thinking about how do you handle intertemporal choice and ambiguity and ambivalence. That's a key factor in professional development of any industry. Right? We're always talking about discovery and dynamics of change. But can you actually make a link between this current stage and the one you get to or want to get to, when you can't connect the beginning to the end? I think a lot of this is a lot of art, a lot of education has this indeterministic feature, and a lot of people have trouble handling ambiguity and ambivalence. That's what dialectics are about, handling the synthesis between the reasonable side and the emotional side. It's not like a blend of 50-50. It depends on the contextualization of whatever part you're of the moment, understanding the moment and selecting from the right array of strategies to be effective to get to what you want, and also tolerating where you are at in the moment. Like if someone's stuck in their job and they really want to have a new one, but they have a family at home and a mortgage and whatever, they could have that aspiration for a new job, but they might be hard-pressed to quit that job immediately before they came up with something else. How do they tolerate those day to day, while they had to do a really good job where they were at and look for something else at the same time. That is an ambiguous, ambivalent time where they would have to use a mindful approach. They have to tolerate the stress because they couldn't solve the problem today. They'd have to regulate their emotions, and they'd have to be interpersonally effective to make sure that they got to the next stage and protected all the people in their environment that they cared for.
So one of the things that the treatment can do is help you develop patient skills. Am I understanding that right?
Sure. And what I always ask people is, so what does that mean? Like, what does it mean that you do have patient skills? Are you just going to sit there? Like, you'll find out in 10 days. Great. What do those 10 days include? How are you going to organize your time so that you can be engrossed in the present moment and get to what you want and take care of yourself and the people around you?
And not be anxious, right?
Or understand your anxiousness, see what you can then do about it. It's hard. It'd be hard pressed to say don't be anxious, but there might be ways to distract yourself, to contribute to other people, etc. To make comparisons, to know what it is that you like for self-care, so that when you feel that way, that's an industry indication of some misery, and you're going to choose, I'm going to regulate my emotions. I'm going to see some movie I really love. I'm going to cook with my kids. I'm going to start a new project. I'm going to read a book. I'm going to whatever it is that makes you feel good, so that that patience skills happen. You're ready. Because in the end of the 10 days, whatever happens, you want to be in the best predisposition to take on whatever decision happens. Either you'll get something or you won't. And if you don't, and you can't tolerate that distress of no, you haven't taken care of yourself over that time, then what? Then you're in an even bigger hole. And I think that mindfulness about utilizing that time to develop the patience can also allow inquiry to think about other ideas that might be even more fruitful. And the ability to clarify your values and then figure out effective transactions through those things that I mentioned to get to what you want also brings about hope, faith, and optimism, and your ability to take action so you can feel confident, feel related, and feel that you have some ability to make change in your life. I think that works very well in, you know, most adult situations.
Thank you for all of this information. It's been enlightening. I think you've calmed us all down just talking about it. We have been talking to Matthew G. Mandelbaum, PhD from New York, and we've been talking about dialectical behavioral therapy that was developed by Dr. Marcia Linehan. Dr. Mandelbaum's website, where there's plenty of posts to give you more information, is www.dbt.solutions. And I'm just fascinated. Thank you for being on Minding Your Business.
It's my pleasure.
I appreciate your helping us with this issue. We'll be right back now. Welcome back to Minding Your Business. I'm DB Hegler, and we are talking about social influence in the workplace. We've gone local. We have Rita Russo, and let me tell you about Rita. Rita has worked as a vice president of marketing for a North American tour producer. She started her own business in advertising, and she has overseen marketing for tours for Janet Jackson, Cher, Britney Spears, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, and everybody. So we thought, who else could tell us a little bit about the evolution of social influence in the workplace? Rita, welcome to Minding Your Business. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's quite an honor.
Hey, let's get right to it. Over the 13 years of expertise and the time that you've seen major, major tours happen, how much of the social influence out there, say Facebook, LinkedIn, and all that stuff, had an influence on people when they come to work in the workplace?
It's huge. I mean, you just walk into someone's office and it's kind of like they look really quick because they're typically online, or you're getting special offers. I mean, even companies have their own intranet, but they also send they have partnerships with other, you know, entertainment, electronic stores, travel, things like that, that they offer their employees special discounts to. I mean, there's companies that specifically send emails to the human resources director and then send it out. And it's like each employee is almost treated as a group, and they call them super groups, and they'll get a discount like a group of 20 would get at a theatrical production.
Are people expecting that at work? Are they expecting to get iTunes cards and tickets and stuff that affect their social life at work? Is that a good motivator?
I think it is. I think it has been. I mean, I've seen with sales, it's definitely a key factor in the marketing plan, is to reach out to companies like this that send out the e-blast offers, that work with the human resources directors, that also, or individually just start calling companies. If you're in a market and you know it really well and working on a show that's coming to play a square, so it's like I'm going to just kind of bump up the effort and make some individual calls myself.
Are people expecting to be treated like, you know, Facebook heroes when they get to work now? They're expecting everybody to give them, let's say, more recognition for their efforts and things like that at work?
I definitely don't think, I mean, I don't know a lot of companies that want you to be on Facebook while you're working. So they're actually, like I was saying, on their intranet, and it's a special offers tab. And then you can scroll. And I mean, it goes from everything from fitness centers to apparel, it's specific stores, to, like I said, entertainment is a big one, because that's a great motivator, be it for company gatherings, even they try to organize it, or if you want to go individually with your family, you still get the same discount.
So workplace motivation, you're saying, is moving into the social piece of people's lives. So if I run a company and I want to reward people, I should be thinking of more lifestyle and fitting that lifestyle as a way of retaining employees.
I think it also gives kind of a thread among the employees. It's like, well, wait, did you go see that? Or did you go, where did you get that? How did you get it? And it's just a common thread that they have as a perk for working with that job. I mean, that's like a company outing to go see the Indians or doing something. And now it's just really spread out. I mean, typically, I first graduated, I had worked at a theater in Akron. And I mean, the thing to do was a company picnic and the holiday party. So summer is a picnic, obviously, and then the holiday party, and that was it. And now there's just so many other options. And, I mean, one, it's great. You can mingle with your coworkers.
As the owner of an advertising agency, how comprehensive do you now have to be in order to get people's attention? Are you getting their attention at home and at work, or how's that work now?
That's a great question. Definitely you have to get both. You know, first thing is to look at the demographics of who your audiences, and currently I'm doing something for families, and it would range from kids starting at 5 to grandparents. And obviously 5-year-olds aren't going to have a wallet or credit card at their disposal.
Some
so
do.
Getting the parents, I know, right?
They got an Apple wallet on the iPhone that mom and dad bought. Some of them do.
Yeah, that's a good point. So it is just about reaching everyone. Through the traditional means are still extremely important. You look at, say, the Plain Dealer, it's not delivered every day. It's gone online primarily. But it's still important to hit the people that do get it at home. But you do need to, like, really, really capture your online audience in addition to your television, in addition to doing radio and promotion. And then online and digital is imperative to a plan. I mean, without it, I don't think you can sell it unless it's just some brand that you can put up and then shut down, you know, then it'll sell out immediately.
So in your professional opinion, I'm going to pose this question. We now live in a world where your refrigerator can keep track of what's in it and order more food on your credit card, I assume. Are we going to get to a place, or do you think there will become a time when the social or advertising will make its way into the workplace so that your laptop will have ads on it or your equipment will have sponsorships. Do you think we can get there from here, or is that just too over the top?
I think what it would be is, I mean, as it is now, I mean, legally, you can't just go after and send someone. I can't just, you know, hey, that's a company, I'll go and get it, you know, something to everyone. They have to opt in for these offers, and because it could be extremely intrusive and burdensome if you're just getting constant ads and emails about this discount offer and that. If you don't subscribe to it, you won't get it, but it's great for these companies that have these lists to be able to say, this is our demographic. So who do you want? And you can give them the zip codes and you know, everything that you need to target to specifically get your audience. And then there's the retargeting ads. So you're looking at a website for a show and you think, maybe I'll go. I'm sorry, I keep referring to a show because I think that's what I, you know, specialize in. But it's working, like seeing a show, going to that site, and then it will follow you for the next 7 pages wherever you go on the web.
So let's say you work for ABC Company, not to be confused with the Alphabet Company, that's a different thing, but the ABC Company. And the ABC Company decides to sponsor a concert, be it a rock concert or jazz concert or whatever. Do you see there coming a day where, because you work for my company and your equipment is owned by the company, I will put ads for that concert that we sponsored on your computer to try to subtly get the employees to go to that thing that we've invested in? Is that day coming?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you mean by putting it on your computer. It would have to be via email or when you go on like the company's intranet site.
Nope. When you boot up, you see that ad because we sponsored that thing and your equipment is the equipment that we provided you, your desktop.
I couldn't answer that. I mean, I would think there obviously would be a announcement and a special offer if they do it. I mean, that would be the way to do it, and not unless it's absolutely the most perfect fit for the ABC company, then it would be like, okay, this would make sense for everybody to want it immediately.
What if we do it the other way? What if everybody in a company wants to go see a concert and we all decide that we're going to post it on the company Facebook page. We want to go to the concert. Do you see that happening?
Yeah, absolutely. That I definitely do. And that, I mean, that's like, you know, music to a producer's ears or a presenter. It's like, please do that anytime. They would love it. And that's why I have to say another aspect. It's like there's the social aspect. But getting involved in the community and forming partnerships is also so crucial because you're getting so many more eyeballs and there's a vested interest then with this partner, be it that they get a, you know, percentage of the tickets sold with a specific code, being a for-profit and you tie in with a nonprofit and they'll help to promote it, you promote it, and the ultimate benefit is going to be obviously for both. It's a mutually beneficial relationship, which is what a partnership should be. But that has been a really crucial like point that I find, I mean, I love working those types of things, promotions out and partnerships, just because I think it's such a great way to get the word out and do something good in the community.
Awesome. Hey, Rita, it is great talking to you. Your agency is Rumor Agency. What's your website?
Rumoragency.com.
And it's RUMORagency.com. You have some great promotions there.
Actually, you'd have to email or contact me.
How do we do that?
Rita Russo, RITARUSSO. At Rumor, RUMOR agency.com.
We are talking to Rita Russo, who is the owner of Rumor Agency in the Northeast Ohio area. And there's going to be some promos if you contact her. It's been great talking to you about the social influence and the workplace. Thanks for being on Minding Your Business.
Thank
you for listening to Minding Your Business on WJCU 88.7 FM. We're on Facebook and Twitter at Always Minding Your Business. Thank you to our new producer and editor, Erica Rush, and our production assistant, India Isaac Curtis, and to all of our guests. Remember, always mind your business. Bye now.